Hey there, everybody. This is your friend in podcasting, Mr. Phil Larinus. And it's happy birthday to us. Yes, indeedy. I just said indeedy. Also, it's Dean Haglund and yours truly celebrating 8 years of changing the way people listen to the internet.
Say it's your birthday. Well, it's my birthday too, yeah.
However, we are not concluding it with the special show and the special guest we promised you in the preview we posted this weekend on the Facebook page.
Happy birthday to you.
So, if you're one of those people who has to hear the show that we promised you, it's been nice knowing you.
Yes, we're going to a party, party. Yes, we're going to a party, party.
We will be bringing you the guest that we promised you. We will be bringing you that exciting conversation that we previewed down the road. Speaking of the road, the show we're going to play for you today features Dean and I taken to the open road of, well, urban Los Angeles.
From a secret location somewhere in America, this is your Chill Pack
Hollywood
Hour.
Your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour with Dean Haglund and Phil Larinus.
Hey everybody, it's Dean Haglund here in the car right beside Paramount Studios on our way to Sony Studios for an exciting rolling edition of Your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. In the passenger seat beside me, as always, well, not always beside me.
Metaphorically in the passenger seat.
It's Phil Larinus, ladies and gentlemen.
It's just that I'm literally...
Literally in the passenger seat.
Today, I'm looking at the guest parking pass.
Yes.
For the world premiere screening of Dead Rising Watchtower.
Yeah, that's exciting.
All along the Dead Rising Watchtower. I love that song. It is sponsored by Crackle.
Yes.
As we talked about before, that was one of my favorite bite-sized candies at Halloween.
And also a Roku channel. Now.
Oh, it is. It is a channel.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. I can see that on my Blu-ray player.
See?
Yeah. I think maybe I've seen a couple of things on.
Maybe you did.
On Crackle. In fact, I think I may have caught several minutes of Face of Terror.
Oh.
On Crackle, wherein you played Timmons
to Rick Schroeder's Where Is She? Exciting Barcelona thriller. Look for it on Crackle.
So there are... I thought there was going to be some information about this movie on here, but there really isn't.
Is there not?
There's just directions
awesome.
On how to get to Sony. And of course, yeah, it's practice.
Right. The joke is the lost on Sony.
Welcome to our worst show ever.
Yay!
So, you know, it's interesting. I don't know when we will end up sharing this show with the listening public.
Right.
Our legion of loyal listeners.
Thank you, legion.
Mighty as they are. I was, as we sit here recording this, on March 11th, 2000, year of our Lord, 2015.
Anno Domini.
I was at UCLA yesterday.
Yeah.
And I am actually using a microphone that was given to us by our loyal listener, Greg Vincent.
Yay!
Very good friend of the show, so thank you, GV. And he and I... we're talking about your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour.
Fantastic.
And he was remembering fondly a show that we did when we were driving.
Ah.
And actually, of course, I believe we've done 3 shows while driving.
You picked me up at the airport. We went to Sacramento. What would be our 3rd one?
Oh, my goodness. There's 4. There's 4. Although I don't know if the one in Sacramento we really did that much on the road. I think most of it we did
in the parking lot
outside.
Yes.
So
waiting to get into Fox.
So do we call that 3.5?
3.5, man.
So I think the first one was crossing over the Canadian border into Idaho.
Really? That was our first?
I believe it might have been.
Didn't it travel to Texas during the border stop in El Paso?
But I don't
that
know.
That was
if we
for the documentary.
Show. Yeah, that was just the documentary.
All
and
right.
Then we did the one where I picked you up from the airport.
Yeah.
And we did one where we drove, or maybe we've even done, now that I think about it, Is it possible we've done two driving to Malibu? No. Why would we have gone to Lee McCloskey twice? We did it once.
Driving to Malibu. That's right.
So we've done three shows, and for some reason, those shows are always really popular.
They're beloved. They're beloved because my attention is focused elsewhere on this Toyota Highlander in front of me, who's pretty fancy on the brakes, I must add. And behind me, I got a Cadillac Escalade, who seems not to see my brake lights at all. I am squeezed in by two giant SUVs, as you are always when driving in Hollywood.
It's an entire episode of Law & Order SUV.
Hilarious.
So what we are planning to do after this screening,
yes,
is to share our
thoughts.
Our thoughts about a movie that I know almost nothing about going into.
Don't you love that, though? Sometimes you want to see a movie fresh, not knowing anything about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You don't sound too enthused.
Well, no. I mean, once we knew we were going, you're absolutely right. I didn't bother to look it up or watch a trailer or learn anything about it because I already knew I was going to see it.
Right.
No, you're right. And when I go to see films at the Directors Guild, I usually, certainly if I haven't already seen the trailer, I'm not going to look it up once I already know that I'm going.
Right.
Yeah, no, that's, you're right. I do enjoy that. So
you're enjoying it again.
But we'll see.
Shut your hole. Okay.
I knew we needed to record a show, so there wasn't really a question of whether we were doing this or not.
Right.
I thought, though, we could take a few minutes as we head towards Sony, seeing as how we're driving, which we virtually never do.
Never do.
Especially in Los Angeles.
During rush hour.
All those earlier shows that I mentioned, two were not even in Los Angeles. One was, outside LA going to Malibu. One was in Canada going into Idaho. And the other one was picking you up from an airport, which is understandable. Because Super Shuttle really wouldn't enjoy us using their vans as a recording studio.
No, not really.
But we live as car-free as possible,
as
really.
As one possibly can in Los Angeles, yeah.
And although, as this wonderful documentary, Los Angeles Plays Itself, posits, it's actually a very easy city to live car-free. Most people do actually live car-free in Los Angeles. It's just that the people who make movies always seem to feel that you have to have a car to get around in Los Angeles. So it's an interesting lie that's perpetuated, but there are many, many working class people in Los Angeles that do not use cars to get around Los
Angeles.
That
are car free. So, oh, can I take this from Australia? Hi.
You're on the air.
You're on the air.
With Dean and Phil. So we thank another loyal listener for that phone call. That's exactly why we will never do live shows.
That's right, because we just stop and take the call.
Take the call, yeah. Everything grinds to a halt. So, and the shows start out slow anyway, so grinding to a halt.
Is what makes it worse.
But we love ironic juxtaposition on your Chillback Hollywood Hour. So I thought, when better than when we are actually in a car leaving an environmental footprint? Mm. On the planet Earth, here in the town where we both live for another 2 months.
Right.
Then to discuss issues of environmental impact as they pertain to motion picture production.
Absolutely. And rightly so. Because, I recall that when in the 90s at Fox, they were very proud to have started a recycling program for used scripts. And this was...
Yeah, that's called sequels, remakes, and reboots.
See what you did? That's awesome. No, they were... They there would be lots of scripts made for every episode for production staff and art directing and all the departments to have. And then at the end of it, they would often just throw it in the garbage. And it wasn't until around 97...
And again, they should have done that before making the film.
Yeah, no one goes out of the way to make a bad movie. Do we always say that?
We may be going out of our way to see one.
Let's cross our fingers on this. I have no idea the quality of this thing.
Earlier this week, I finally answered several thoughtful questions about this topic that were sent to me from Sehi Simmons, who was our costumer
The
Lady Killers, and part of a dissertation at a university in the United Kingdom. Have you ever heard of that?
Oh, yes. I have heard of the United Kingdom.
So, I thought we could discuss the questions that I was posed right now.
Okay, let's do that.
And really, the first overarching, you know, thesis was about whether or not this is something that filmmakers and film producers should worry about, or is this something that is potentially, you know, a restriction of artistic and creative freedom?
Well, okay. So what you're talking about is two separate things. There's the production itself, which uses resources.
Right.
Faxes, papers, memos, emails, all of these things that, you know, a lot of people still demand to have the script in paper and all that sort of thing.
Right, we'll get into the specifics of what the categories are, but question is...
But then you're talking about the actual creative process, and should you be thinking about limiting your resources to save the environment?
Yeah.
Or do you allow... Well, but as we always said, limitations fuel creativity, right? How to work around them.
Absolutely. I said this in my answer, that isn't it incumbent upon creative people at a time when we desperately need to apply human ingenuity and creativity to how we more responsibly marshal the available resources.
Yes.
Isn't it incumbent upon those of us who are in a creative trade to embody how that's done?
Yeah.
To
sure.
point the way.
And find maybe solutions that you wouldn't otherwise find in a unusual industry, to say the least.
And also in a creative enterprise, in making a film, certainly as a director and as a producer, isn't your job requirement to come up with the best way to utilize the resources at your disposal? That's your whole job.
Yeah.
So it's just another element to think about when you're already doing the job you've been assigned to do.
Right. I think that the question then would be, you know, does the set construction depend on used wood or tearing apart last week's set to build this week's set? You know, yeah, clearly the art director, they've designed some set, you need an elevator, that sort of thing. You're not going to go and go, well, we can't get an elevator, but here's some stairs from an episode of Gilmore Girls that we can use and use that instead. You know, I see that problem as well as an argument to,
although I think a very smart use of resources, though it poses other potential environmental issues and impacts, but a very smart use of resources in that regard is use actual locations.
Right.
Like people always say about cars, you know, well, the gas mileage on that car and the environmental impact on this brand new car. And, you know, it turns out, use hybrids, that'll save the environment. Oops, hybrids are the most impactful cars ever created for environment.
The nickel cadmium.
And the message that was never sent, because it doesn't fuel the economy the way that we have it configured, is the most environmentally friendly car you're ever going to drive is the one you're already driving, because it's already been made. The impact of manufacturing is the most enormous impact there is.
Right.
So if we could shift our economy into one of recycle, refurbish, reuse.
Right.
Again, jokes aside, Hollywood's
scripts
is pointing that way. But if we could convert our economy to that in regard, away from a manufacturing base and towards a refurbishing, repurposing, reuse base, we theoretically might even have more jobs than we do now, because manufacturing jobs is the disappearing sector, right?
Absolutely.
But also, you've taken away the first huge environmental impact. So I would say with filmmaking, actual locations really is helpful. And also, if we're talking about making film in Los Angeles, let's keep it in our backyard and in this city, I think it's very helpful. Don't get pulled over by a police officer.
Yeah, that's very helpful.
I think that it's very potentially helpful in regards to the relationship that a crew and a cast has to their local local environment, if they are shooting out on location,
right.
if they are getting to know and appreciate the city they call home.
In the neighborhood.
Through the process of their work.
Yeah.
It deepens their connection to that neighborhood, to that environment. And most people, when they have a deeper connection, a deeper relationship, they're going to start taking more responsibility.
That is true. So that said, though, you know, Hitchcock always hated working on location. He couldn't control the elements.
Well, he hated Los Angeles. No, he did.
But
he only ever made one film that had any part of it set in Los Angeles, and it's only the first 7 minutes of it. All those movies, all those years, none of his movies, all of them were shot here, and none of them were set here.
Oh, well, that's true.
Yeah, because he hated it so much.
Speaking of loving Los Angeles, look at that sunset.
That is a beautiful, beautiful sunset.
Just carving out the old mountains.
For those of you who want to follow us on Google Earth, no, I mean, this is pre-recorded.
Pre-recorded. Imagine where we are.
So, as I addressed, though, even though I believe that going out onto location helps stave off some of the manufacturing impact, as you're saying, the
right.
creation and building of sets, which can have,
yeah,
you're absolutely right, a big environmental impact.
And wastage and all that sort of thing.
Now, of course, going out on location, you've created the issue of transportation.
Parking.
Impact.
Yeah.
Fuel usage.
Right.
So what I have never understood on any, and you know, I've done a lot of films on location.
Right.
In the last few years, I've been a part of several movies. And whenever anybody finds out that I either carpool, which I always do.
Right.
You know, I never came to set alone, even on our movie, The Lady Killers. Or I take public transportation, or I walk.
Or you walk.
Right?
It's in the neighborhood.
It's in the shoots in, oh man, Eagle Rock, for
right.
example. I live in Las Feliz, and people would be shocked to find out that I walked that.
To set.
It's several miles.
How could you do that?
I said, yeah, it took me about an hour and 15 minutes to walk to set.
Enough time to get your head into the game and
absolutely.
Like the whole thing.
And have my energy just flowing in the
yep.
in the right direction. Absolutely. But anyway, the point is that people can, again, live car-free, and the productions themselves, if this was just something that they took responsibility for, could obviously provide a carpooling system. They could also pay for people's use of public transportation
right.
and give out maps and directions and instructions. How easy would that be? Of how to use the public transportation routes to get where you need to go, and to provide maybe even via van pickups from the crew from some of those transportation hubs.
Absolutely. At the same time.
And the cost of reimbursing people for the use of public transportation is more than offset by what you're saving on parking
yes.
costs alone. So the production is saving money. And this is what I love, is the idea of coming up with ideas that will maybe inspire people to do the right thing because it's in their best interest to
right,
do it.
To save the money. Yeah. However, you know, in the 90s, I don't know if it's still the way, there certainly is a pecking order on set of who's driving what car, and kind of a pissing match that goes amongst.
Yeah, but if the director's doing it,
yeah.
who's going to complain?
Well, that's
now,
the
look.
Thing. It's got to lead from the top down on that sort of thing.
And so, you know, so therefore also, the only vehicles that you have there are actual production vehicles.
Right.
Which, of course, reduces things like liability issues, which is a waste of resources. And then the other element about it that falls under the heading of more responsibly managing and marshalling resources, though it is not directly an environmental impact, but you have now prevented exhausted, overworked, underslept
right.
Crew people from endangering themselves and others by getting behind the wheel of a car. And as we know, accidents happen in Southern California involving crew people who are working really long hours.
Yeah, absolutely. That, in fact, I don't know if I ever told you, the Teamster that was falling asleep when he was driving us home from Malibu, weaving all over. Like, we were all nearly, one guy nearly wiped out all the lone gunmen at once because he was so exhausted, and yet he had to work, I know, long hours. So, I agree with that.
So I think there's a lot in terms of transportation that, that could be done to really, really reverse the impact of you know, that has been the traditional way to go on to location.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, you brought up recycling, you brought up paper. I think most shoots, even on location, do a pretty good job of recycling, separating out recycling and
now,
trash.
Now,
and,
yeah.
And everyone should, obviously. Yeah. That should be the responsibility of the caterer or the craft service department. Every single department should be responsible for this. When it comes to scripts, like you said, you know, with tablets and handheld devices now the amount of paper that we actually need to print is really, really reduced already.
Yeah.
And when it comes to scripts, how long has it... I don't remember how many years it's been since, you know, the paper I was using wasn't recycled.
Yeah.
And also, since I was printing scripts on both sides.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
Right? Every script should be printed on both sides.
That's exactly right.
So, you know, these should just be rote, and I think by now, it's probably been adopted to most places.
There's one writer I'm working with who still demands everything printed out. It's a bit of a pain in the ass. It's very old school, but you know, a Luddite.
And at some point, I would wonder how good the work is, because truly, you know, I think the best, most interesting artists are the one who are actually
embracing technology.
Well, and also just, you know, is my approach to this material interesting and nourishing,
right,
in addition to the material itself,
right.
And if your approach to it isn't, I think there's a disconnect between how far you can go with any attempt to make the material then interesting or nourishing.
Fascinating,
right? So I think it is all about really riding the horse in the direction it wants to go.
That's good.
The big one for me that is tough to wrap my head around is water. Massive consumption, you know, plastic water. It takes, what was it? It takes either 3 or 5, now I forget, but liters of water to create the plastic bottle for a 1 liter bottle.
Ah, right.
And so just the creation of these plastic bottles is killing us. And now this is, you know, not just about recycling and waste. This is about water shortage everywhere.
Right.
Have you been reading about the fact that Sao Paulo, third largest city in the world, I think it is, has been utterly without water for the better part of a year?
Oh my God.
Yeah, there's nothing coming out of the taps.
So what do they do? Just truck it in?
It's all people bicycling big jugs of water to people for them to cook with, shower with, eat with.
Wow.
And of course these bicyclists, you know, are hauling these huge things by bicycle up these hills. They're getting robbed regularly.
Oh my God.
It's just insane. But that's the future.
Right.
Massive water shortages. I mean, we've had rain here in Los Angeles, and we're still going to end up with half of what a normal year is, and this is the most we've had in 5 years.
5 years. And yeah, we're on our fourth year of a severe drought. There's two up in the valley, or not the valley, near Bakersfield, two townships that get their water trucked in because they completely run out.
We would need, I think it was said at the beginning of March, we would need to receive 1.5 inches of rain every one of the 31 days in March to be out of a drought.
Right, just out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not, never mind to now make up for it
for
and start to replenish the surplus. So wasting water is a huge issue, and creating plastic bottles, you know, the whole bottled water industry was really such a
sneaky,
it's a fraud, really.
Yeah.
that was hoisted upon people, and its ramifications are huge in terms of the amount of water that's wasted making them.
Yeah, but is the bottle, even when recycled, still used three?
Well, no. So absolutely, the bottles themselves need to be recycled. There's no question about that.
Right. It's when you make them out of from scratch.
But making them. What you need to do is you need to reduce those that are being made. But what do you have on a film set? You have to buy
tons of plastic
crate after crate of
water
for each day, and you know, I'm not sure plastic or paper cups and a dispenser will work.
Right.
Because then you have a different kind of waste.
Yeah.
And I'm sure water is being used to create plastic cups. So,
so glass bottle. So you need a glass bottle.
Or I'm wondering, like you're a marathon runner. Those water bottles, which I think are plastic, but a different kind of plastic, but that you can like hook to your belt. You know, the bigger ones.
Yeah, yeah. These are BPA free. They don't have any of the hormones in it. They're harder plastic, so they're reusable much more often.
If a crew was each assigned one,
right
at the beginning of the shoot, that's yours.
Perhaps with the name of the production on it.
The name of the production on it, and that's yours, and maybe even the person's name, like a little gift.
Little gift
at the outset of production. Couldn't that be something? And then you have, you know, huge water dispensers that they're refilling.
Right. Yeah, I would think that's a great idea.
Because I also think a lot of water gets wasted too, just in the. Is this your bottle or was this my bottle? You know,
right.
How many half-drunk bottles of water are left laying around on these sets?
Absolutely. Too many.
And if it's yours and it's attached to you...
you're going to know.
Yeah, you're going to know.
Yeah, that's mine. Okay, great.
Are these my pants that I'm wearing? So then the bottle next to it would be mine.
That's my name on it.
So those were the big
issues. I like
that idea. And the ideas. I mean, is there anything else that occurs to you real quick that is... that you think of in the you know the daily production process?
Well,
this has got a huge impact, and we're just doing it because this is how we've done it.
Well, I like the there was a bunch of actors around 2002 here in LA that started going around to the end of the day film sets and picking up the food from the catering and taking it to homeless shelters in downtown Skid Row. I thought that was pretty innovative. I don't know if that program still goes on. I know when a film shoot is finished in LA, the caterer knows to go and take the over, you know, because otherwise it gets thrown out. So the food that doesn't get eaten that day is taken to homeless shelters.
The problem is that has to be individual rather than the production itself.
Right.
Because the production can get sued if anything goes wrong with the people eating food.
That's correct. So, yeah.
Which is why restaurants can't do it.
Right.
So, but that's a nice thought.
Nice
hey,
thought.
We're right up on Sony Pictures now.
Yeah, look at this.
So why don't we shut it down, and when we come back, we will have seen Dead Man Walking.
Yeah, no. We're doing the red carpet.
Dead Rising Watchtower.
Dead Rising, not Dead Man Car. What'd you call it?
Dead Man Walking.
That's another movie. Dead Rising, semicolon,
Dead Rising. Watchtower.
Yeah.
Semicolon. They're not even using a colon. This is really low budget.
Of course, one of the big stars on The X-Files, and he's making a documentary called The Truth Is Out There.
One of the things that UFO research has done to me is instill in me a healthy disrespect for the things that government says.
They are poisoning our people. There is a population control agenda. There really are people who want to kill off the majority of the people in the world.
If we don't allow these corrupt banks to fail, then the nation will fail, and there will be no recovery.
Don't stand on the sides of the river and comment on how corrupt and dark and evil everything is. We all know that.
I don't need to have you understand or agree with me or believe. It doesn't matter to me. I know what I know.
The name of our film is...
The truth is out there.
But it really isn't.
But isn't there a universal truth that science is going for?
Perhaps the universal truth is what makes us subject.
Okay, you just blew my mind.
So we just saw...
The fantastic...
The Walking Dead...
meets...
All Along the Watchtower. No, what is this called?
Dead Rising Watchtower.
Okay, right.
On Crackle. If you have Crackle on your Roku, you can just watch it. You didn't have to go to Sony Studios to watch it.
Right. Crackle now is, I think, a wholly owned subsidiary of Sony.
Maybe. Or vice versa. But it did come with very bitter wine and...
Look, and the movie that we just saw is based on a video game. It's a video game adaptation.
Right.
And as the producers...
Remind us...
At the beginning, look, here's a rule of thumb. We do have a lot of listeners who are aspiring filmmakers, fledgling filmmakers.
As I refer to them, the kids.
When you are having your first screening of a film, I don't think you're setting the right tone for people to enjoy your movie by having endless introductions where you thank people.
You say that.
I say this because, look, I've done a lot of movies now, and
right.
It's really important to set the tone correctly in the house.
Which the director kind of did. He said, this is really fun.
He tried.
Whoop it up, and yeah, and hoot it.
He tried.
Yeah?
But he's telling us how to respond to it. That's not right, you know? I mean, it's like you need an opening act.
Right.
And there's a problem when everyone's being introduced who worked on the film, produced the film, responsible for the film,
different.
And give them a round of applause, because the thing is, the audience hasn't seen it yet.
Right, so why should I applaud it?
Right, you haven't done anything yet. That's
yeah.
what I always say when I go and I introduce a film, and people out of habit will applaud the director when he comes up to introduce a film, and I'll always say, shut up, I haven't done anything yet.
Right.
should be applauding you. You're the ones who are here.
What, but you have done something, and that you worked very hard to get this thing to the screen.
That's true. Of course, that's...
Clap for the fact that you're there,
I guess,
and you have something to show.
But the way they start to thank everybody
yeah.
is like...
award show.
Well, yeah, it's a little bit like an award show, and like you're at the end of the journey. But as we know, the first screening is really the beginning of the journey.
Totally.
Now you're
yeah.
getting started. So that would be my advice, is use the time, any amount of time you have on stage to talk about a film that you've made is a rare opportunity.
Right.
So really think about how to maximize that opportunity.
Absolutely.
Okay. So that
said, Gary Jones was great in this.
Gary Jones, our friend Gary Jones, who
has been on the show.
Guested on your Chillback Hollywood Hour. He was really good. This
yeah.
is a movie. This is at 2 hours long.
Plus.
Based on a video game.
Yeah.
Did not know whether it wanted to be a comedy, a drama. It was surprisingly action-free.
Yes. I think the... Well,
it yeah. moved as slow as the zombies themselves.
Yeah.
It really did. You can try
look at me go.
Hungry.
Thank you.
And... you mentioned something about these kind of zombie movies. I don't watch The Walking Dead, but even during the film, I was thinking, this film is way too far behind the curve for even zombie fans to enjoy this.
You gotta stay abreast of all your zombie movies if you're gonna do a zombie movie, because you have now set a bar, and if you're not, you know, Walking Dead's made it seem like killing zombies is kind of a lackadaisical thing. Like, you just sort of go up and stab one in the head or shoot one in the head. Just don't get bit by them. And you can sort of just saunter through the wheat fields of Atlanta on a sweaty day with a knife in hand and maybe a katana sword, and you will be fine. There's no threat anymore. So Walking Dead has removed the threat of zombies, knowing that it's just a stab through the skull, unless you are swarmed by 80,000 of them. That it seems to be the only way zombies can actually get you, is if there's more than six that you can't handle.
Or they can write and produce a film.
Yeah, that's another threat altogether.
So there's many talented people in the cast. They're not... I appreciated that the director stood up there and said, hey, this is the film. I was allowed to make the film I wanted to make.
Right.
And what I like about that is... you know, take ownership of the film.
Yeah.
So, you know, if as an audience, you don't dig it, it's probably his fault.
Exactly.
He's the guy to blame.
There's the guy.
And
the way he cut it and the whole...
I like that a lot. And,
yeah.
You know, and I don't think the actors were done a lot of favors. There were many talent... Look, Oscar nominee Virginia Madsen's in it.
Yeah.
Rob Riggle from The Daily Show, who's
hilarious.
So funny in so many movies.
Yep.
He's in it. Dennis Haysbert, who is my favorite insurance salesman, even more so than J.K. Simmons.
Right.
He's played the president in
the 24. Yes.
So he's in it, and of course, as we mentioned, Gary Jones. The young gal who plays the reporter Jordan, Keegan Connor Tracy.
Yeah.
And Gary Jones, I was actually very impressed by.
Right.
Because in a film whose tone shifts wildly, where
yeah.
scenes are literally directed to be, on the one hand, broad comedy.
Yeah.
And then other scenes, drama. And then other scenes, emotional melodrama. And then other scenes, obvious visual pastiche references to other movies that we've loved, like right. Evil Dead, or, as we mentioned, Escape from New York.
Right, even, yeah.
Gary Jones and Keegan-Connor Tracy both found real characters to play.
Yep.
And in the case of Gary Jones, it's really kind of an old prose performance because he manages to mine humor out of it whenever possible while still
keeping it grounded,
playing it for real.
Yeah.
And
it's hard to do.
Not only hard to do, but as we've talked about before, I kind of feel like if more and more and more and more and more movies are going to be based on video games or graphic novels or comic books, or, you know, I think it becomes all the more important for actors to have the integrity to try to ground their performance in something real.
And yeah, in something personal.
And he did it, and it was it was really interesting to watch and fun to watch.
Yeah.
And like I said, I don't think I've ever seen that young woman who played the reporter Jordan in anything, but I was impressed by her doing the same thing.
Absolutely. That
said. So all that said, I whispered to you, I think right before the film started, that I recently listened to one of our old Chill Pack Hollywood Hour episodes where you kind of held court about why adapting films from video games never has worked and never will work.
Right.
Not that it is impossible per se to make a good movie from it,
right.
but that it makes no sense. As a business model, it doesn't make any sense.
Right.
Do you remember?
I do. And this is the idea that we went to video games specifically because action movies that we love so much, we wanted to control. And so the video game allows you to be in the action movie and control the action. You are out there shooting, you're out there killing. So then to take that control away and make you just watch it again is pointless. I mean, I know there's all those websites now that just have guys commenting on video games, but even that is a Mystery Science Theater 3000 appeal. So if I don't have the control, if I'm not shooting the zombie and making my way out of the quarantine zone or whatever, I really lose interest really quickly in one of these movies. Even if there's great characters, and I'm not pulling the trigger, I got problems.
There were a couple other points that you made that I thought were really interesting. And you know, that conversation, I can't remember the episode number, but it was at Sip Tea.
Oh, yeah, remember that place?
Yeah, and Andrew Romaglia was on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Later in the show, we had Cynthia Vincent, fashion designer Cynthia Vincent, on. But when Andrew was on...
Should I take Santa Monica or go through Beverly Hills?
I'll go through Santa Monica Boulevard.
With Santa
Monica,
yeah,
that makes more sense.
Sure.
So you made a couple other interesting points, which were something along the lines that video games actually generate more revenue than movies do.
Absolutely.
So it's not like the video game needs advertising. And indeed, it wouldn't be good advertising for the video game because...
The movie's probably...
Even if the movie's good, people who are coming to the movie to see it because it's a good movie are probably not the people who are going to be turned onto a video game. They're not watching video games.
Right.
Or playing video games.
Because they're watching movies.
Right. Or they already knew the video game.
Right. So there's no point.
Nobody is ever going to say, I was motivated to play a video game because
I saw a movie. Yeah.
And the other way, you already pointed out that nobody who plays the game needs the movie.
Well, and this is the thing.
You're denying them what they most enjoy. And also, although I will tell you this, this seems kind of, I mean, this is a mean joke, I guess, but I actually thought that this was the video game adaptation that most felt to me like the experience I have while playing a video game or watching someone else play a video game, which was the getting to the levels that would reveal the story turns were taking forever to get to because I can't get good enough at the game to get there quickly. And if I'm watching someone else play, then I have no control at all.
Right, and you're losing interest at their skill level. Whatever.
So, you know, you don't get, so anyway.
I know, and you think about this, like think about the top three grossing product locomotives, right? So now, Harry Potter apparently is number one now, through books, merchandise, the theme park in Disney World, all of that is number one. Star Wars is number two, merchandise, movies, all
right,
that sort of thing.
Right.
Number three is Call of Duty. Now, Call of Duty has very limited merchandise. They got some t-shirts, they have no movie products, there's no theme park attached to it, they don't have a live stage show, there's no Call of Duty ice capades, there's nothing like that. They got the games, one through four, and a couple t-shirts. And
a
they
Call
are...
of Duty ice capades would involve me as a sniper taking out figure skaters.
See, that would be something they might work on, but they don't need to because they're number three in the top of revenue-earning product locomotives. So for them to do a movie of a Call of Duty movie is redundant and or stupid. It could actually damage the brand.
It could damage the brand. It is a hugely expensive. I understand when movies and television shows are loss leaders in that they advertise ancillary merchandise.
Right.
Or they, in the case of TV shows, they advertise because it's your top ratings earner. You have to pay all the actors so much money that the film, that the show itself is costing you money. It's
right.
Losing money, but you're able to draw an audience to those other shows around it. And
Call of Duty has basically taken every World War II trope and made it a game that you can play. So it's a World War II scenario, but it is every World War II movie with John Wayne that you are now in.
Right, so why would you need to spend the hundreds of millions of dollars making a movie and marketing a movie
that you've already had, that you got 50 years of movie behind you.
Right, and when, as we said, it's not gonna move more games.
Right.
And you don't need that kind of advertising.
Don't need
anyway.
It. Not if you're number three.
But it really does boil down to what these producers so accurately said, which is that video games are the next comic books and graphic novels, in that that's where stories are going to be mined for adaptation. And they're right in that, you know, the bean counters are looking for something with built-in audience.
Right.
You know, the Harry Potter books have all been made. All the YA books have been made.
Yeah, yeah.
All the comic books have been made. So what's next? Oh,
yeah,
okay.
The video games. Yeah.
But as we say, they're missing the point. It's not the same. You can understand why people who love a book would go to see a movie.
Yeah.
Even if the movie is almost always going to be a disappointment compared to the book.
Right. Same with the graphic novel.
Because at least it's another form of storytelling. But this is absolutely apples and oranges altogether.
Yeah.
You don't go to the video game for the storytelling.
Right. You go for the action and the control and your own skill set. You're bringing your own skill set to it, which you don't bring. I mean, if you're reading at a grade three level, then yeah, there's a skill set. But you're not bringing a skill set of interactiveness to any other story form than video gaming. And there is a story that they put in, and some people are digging storytelling in the game format, but you are unleashing those story points based on your ability to get through a level.
And you know what else? I can understand why, and I don't know if any of these games are successful, but I can understand why, because as a kid, I loved Star Trek, and then there was a cool Star Trek game after Star Trek 2 that was in arcades that I loved to play.
Right.
I did love playing the TIE Fighter.
Star Wars, yeah.
Or the X-Wing,
Death Star
game.
The wireframe thing.
Yeah, I liked playing that because there is an appeal, obviously, of, okay, you love watching James Bond movies, you love watching Star Wars, you love watching Star Trek, now you can put yourself in the position of your favorite characters and play a game.
Right.
I get that appeal, but I do not believe, as we've said, that there's any appeal to, you've already been these characters,
right.
Now watch someone else do it.
Yeah. And do it without you being a part of it.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense. And also, I feel that once you've invested yourself in a game, you're actually running the risk that you will never mind not interest them, but you will anger them because they've invested so much in this, and if you don't do a good job with it,
right,
well, then you've kind of pissed all over something somebody loves.
Absolutely. Think of that. Then that's even a bigger risk. So, yes. So Dead Rising. Yeah.
As a business model, it does not... Now, that doesn't say that the make the movie bad because it's a bad business model and a bad idea, but...
You sure got an uphill hoe to climb.
But and I don't think know. My saying that it was as slow as the zombies themselves probably...
is our catchphrase of the week. Do we have Garrett Watley have a catchphrase of the week?
The catchphrase of the week.
Because now we're in the middle of West Hollywood. Look at this. The marathon's going to be coming right down this street this Sunday.
We've got POTUS in town, too. We've got street closures all over the place.
It's a crazy time to be in Los Angeles, people.
So I was at the Bel Air Hotel last night.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about this right over there, the Bel Air Hotel.
No, back.
That hotel, the Bel Air.
Yeah, Stone Canyon.
Oh, the lovely one with the swans out
front. Yes, the swans. Swans made for life. Did you know this?
I did not.
Yeah.
Did they tell you that at the restaurant?
That's a thing that I know about swans.
Did you eat there or did you sit at the bar?
Of course, I ate there. This was the second time I'd had dinner there. This time Wolfgang Puck did not come up and sit down with us.
Oh, well,
I did not see him
good
last night. But I did see Dwayne Johnson.
Oh, yes. The Rock.
I did smell the same air that The Rock was smelling. I don't know. I got
did
nothing.
He join you at your table?
No, but so this was very exciting. I was there with Lily and her mother and her stepfather, and you know, we were able to say, look, that's Dwayne Johnson. Who? The Rock.
Right.
Oh, The Rock.
Now, I would say the same thing.
What was he in? So you explain who The Rock was, and
right.
then, and who was he with?
Right.
What do you mean, who was he with? You said he was with Dwayne something or another?
So you said hi, hey Dwayne, how's it going? What's up with that new San Andreas movie?
By the way, tiny guy, just tiny.
No, he's not.
He's tiny.
Like Schwarzenegger tiny?
I towered over him.
You did not.
No, I didn't. But I will tell you that without my glasses on, I at first thought he was Keegan-Michael Key.
Wow, that is tiny.
Who Lily's worked with, whose friends, you know, Lily's friends with him.
Yeah.
And worked with him on multiple occasions, actually.
Right.
And so the whole thing started because I said to Lily, you going to go up and say hi to him?
Keegan-Michael Key.
She had no idea why she would go up to say hi to The Rock.
Right.
Yeah.
That's very funny.
So that's my brush with greatness.
Fantastic.
At the Bel Air Hotel. That was name dropping.
That was name dropping.
Your Chill Back Hollywood Hour name dropping of the week.
And as Bobby De Niro always said to me, don't bother name dropping. see what I said?
What's always made that joke work is that it's Bobby.
I know. Never mind.
That's always the best.
Bobby.
Yeah.
Look at where we are, historic big Barney's Beanery. That's where the Doors would hang out with the Led Zeppelin.
Oh, sure. I've spent time at Barney's. You know, Barney's Beanery was also Barney's Beanery was a favorite eatery of Inspector Columbo, Lieutenant Columbo.
Oh, no.
Played by Peter Falk.
That.
Yeah. You know, and we've talked so much about how movies and TV shows don't honor Los Angeles locales as the actual locales, but Columbo actually did a good job of that.
Yeah.
But talk to me about the Emser Tile Building.
Oh, yeah.
Fascinated by this. Because
yes. This is quite a... built in, I'm going to say, 23. It was actually a storage facility, and they put the Emser Tile as just the ground floor, but it got that classic neon up there that's now part of the National Historic Registry of Neon.
I see.
And so that stays there. But I don't think the whole building is tile. I think it's still maybe used as storage. I don't know enough about it because, as you know, I give a downtown walking tour, but not a West Hollywood, Santa Monica walking tour, insofar as they always tear down so many things here.
Right.
Because isn't also the Silver Spoon gone?
Silver Spoon is gone, but it is a great seafood restaurant.
Oh, is it?
Best kind of seafood restaurant we're going to have here on the West Coast. You know, it's kind of a New England style.
Oh, really? This place here. Beach Nation.
Is that what it was?
Yeah. That was it.
Okay.
Isn't that the location?
No, that's not. That was not the location and that's not the name of it, but that's all right. We thank you for playing.
Oh, did I? Oh, see? This is how long it's been since I've been down here.
Is this a good show? It's
I
this one right here. It's Connie and Ted's.
Oh, look at
and
that.
And they're still open.
And do they have the separate bar on the side? No, look at, they changed the whole building.
It's but it's a great place for, you know, like lobster rolls,
and
for oyster spread, you know, oysters from around the world.
Absolutely. And, this is where my car stalled one time.
Right, we're driving through West Hollywood.
Yes, we are. Yeah. Oh, and I needed gas, but I will stop that later. Anyway.
Probably a little cheaper somewhere else. Yeah. So I think we're out of stuff to talk about.
I don't know if we are, because there was one other thing. Let's see, the after party, the bitter thing, the zombies, the poor extras that had to stand there all night.
They hired people, and these would not be caterers.
No.
Right? They hired people to be zombies as atmosphere for both the arrivals and the after party.
Right.
And they actually threw themselves into it. Some of them really seemed to be having fun.
Right.
We have, we took photos.
Right, that might be my Facebook page photo.
I'm gonna doctor up some of that stuff. You also were kind enough to take a photo of me by the actual Ghostbusters Ecto-1.
The hearse modified into a Ghostbusters car.
So these performers who had to stay in this zombie apparel, they were, I wanted the movie to be half as much fun as they were.
I know. And they, you know, you think about, I don't know what they get. What would you get paid? What would you do that for? A couple $100 for the night? $200?
I don't know, but you know, walking into the after party, all, you know, outside
in one of the smoke machines.
Historic courtyards there at
Sony Pictures Studios,
yeah. And all smoked up.
Yeah.
And with the zombies coming in out of the shadows and everything, that actually did as good a job of embodying the appeal of a video game as anything I've seen.
Absolutely. So
imagine that. It takes a... Now that's something that we should be on to. Adapting a video game for the stage.
An immersive
stage experience. A la Sleep No More.
Yes.
In New York.
That's right. So you get rent a giant warehouse.
Don't take an interactive mediated experience and turn it into a fully mediated experience.
Right. And change, yeah.
If you're going to make it a into another media, have it be a live event that is still immersive, even if it is not role-playing or interactive.
Right. That you still...
But it's immersive.
Yeah.
So you get... atmosphere in a way that you can't on a video game.
Right, you're in Arkham Asylum or whatever.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I like that, sir. Anyway.
Somebody out there
please,
with the energy should take that to the video game developers.
Because, this is what I was going to talk about. You know, you're rapidly coming to the age where you're supposed to start playing video games. Yes. Oh. You are supposed to get an Xbox when you now approach... the age that you're getting to, in order to keep up your visual acuity and your hand-eye coordination.
Oh, interesting.
And they are now buying Xboxes and PS4s for old folks' homes, so that the elderly can
start... So that's the age that I'm approaching.
Yes. No, the idea is that you keep up, you're playing video games, keep the brain going long after your body is up and left you. Which, I'm not saying that your body's doing that, but...
No, you know, I believe in the old adage, you're as young as the woman you feel.
What? That's horrible.
What did I just say?
Oh my gosh, is this... Did they just tear down the Trader Joe's back there?
Yes, they did. So we're passing right now the...
Formosa.
The world famous, what used to be Warner Hollywood.
Oh yes, the Warner.
It's now the Lot.
The Lot.
And the Formosa Cafe right here, as seen in so many great movies, but L.A. Confidential, one of the iconic Los Angeles movies.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, this is where they filmed Some Like It Hot, and Tony Curtis, Jack Lemmons would go hang out there and drink.
Like, that must now have some sort of protection that it can't be torn down.
I believe it does. I believe it does.
Because everything else is being torn down. Look at across the street here. Another big empty pit.
Yeah.
This is crazy. Oh, well.
There were so many great bars in that back stretch that no longer exist that I used to go to all the time.
And there used to be this car wash here with the taco stand I love so much. Yeah. See, now we sound like old folks driving through Hollywood.
Yeah, is this interesting at all?
I don't know.
This is probably...
That was all the points I was going to make. We got to buy video games and start playing them to maintain our brain...
visual acuity and our hand-eye coordination.
Right. Keep our brains from rotting because we're just doing podcasts.
Because scintillating, insightful conversation is not keeping our brains.
No. Yeah, we could do that in our sleep, for crying out loud.
Yeah, we do. We roll out of bed and podcast. Wait, that sounded weird.
Yeah, it did.
Sounded not right at all.
No.
Okay, well, you know, you can find every gosh darn installment of your Chill Back Hollywood Hour. Literally. Dude. I mean, by the time, who knows when you're going to hear this.
I don't know.
But by the time we have our 8th anniversary show.
Wow, that's coming up.
In the first week of May.
Really?
If that's happened or if that hasn't happened.
Whatever.
By then, every single show in the history of Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, all 400 plus shows will be available for streaming,
yep,
downloading, for listening pleasure.
Yes, on iTunes.
Well, they won't all be available. There's only ever 10 available.
Oh, yeah,
iTunes,
that's right.
But they'll all be available at chillpackhollywood.com, chillpackhollywood.com, and, of course, at Blog Talk Radio.
Yay!
That's who made all that possible, restoring all those shows, our hosts at Blog Talk Radio. Mm-hmm. Of course, you can like us on Facebook.
Please like us.
Facebook.com/ChillPackHollywood.
Yeah.
You can follow us on Twitter.
We're at Dean and Phil.
You can write us.
Yes, that's easy.
ChillPackHollywood@yahoo.com. Yeah. And we should point out that you're going to be looking for gas soon. And if only we were driving in the Northeast United States right now.
Oh, wouldn't that be good?
We would be able to fuel up, and would indeed fuel up, at this show's sponsor, Empire State Gas. So if your travel plans are going to take you anywhere near the Northeast United States, please stop in at one of the friendly, well-appointed, easy-on-the-eyes, sweet-smelling establishments that bear the proud sign Empire State Gas. They are the largest independently owned gas station in the Northeast United States. Their gas is organically grown. It is environmentally friendly, as we talked about earlier on the show. That's
right.
So important. And apparently right now, if you mention hashtag Dean and Phil,
really?
You'll get 10 cents off a gallon.
Wow, that is a deal.
And that makes a difference, because the truth is, Empire State Gas is more expensive than most places.
Because it's gluten-free and organically grown.
It's organically grown, and that costs more money. To do the right thing costs more money.
Sorry.
But the nice thing is they pass along those profits to their shareholders. Please drop in on them, mention hashtag Dean and Phil, fill up your tank, free tote bags for the kids, for the first 40,000 kids 14 and under.
That's right.
Empire State Gas, we've got great gas. Till next week, I'm Phil Larinus.
I'm Dean Haglund. See you then.
Historic building in downtown Los Angeles. It's your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. It's your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. It's your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. In a historic building in downtown Los Angeles. Historic building in downtown Los Angeles.
Belated spoiler alert.